Behind the brand Jordani Spirit on Gogos is a creative force shaking up fashion. Hi, my name is Nikoplas Kasovitis and you're listening to SBS Greek. In this podcast episode, we visited fashion designer and artist Jordan Gogos at his studio, joined by Greek-Australian artist and collaborator George Raftopoulos. Jordan and George talk shop on their Australian fashion week collaboration and how the Greek-Australian roots fuel their art and design practice. From Grecian antiquity to St. George's horse and onto the 2025 Australian Fashion Week runway, this conversation traverses Greek paraphernalia, history and the delightful chaos of being a creative that feels both ancient and utterly now.
Yordanis Gogos is my name, and then Spiridon was named after my grandfather who passed away.
How does your Greek-Australian heritage inform your identity as a designer and your creative vision?
Using the Greek name, particularly in mainstream media, was something I kind of stuck to because no one knew how to pronounce it. But I also thought it was kind of cool because it was like, for me, when someone can't pronounce a name, it's like, it sounds more expensive in Australia. You know, it's like, oh, that European name. So I was like, okay, run with this really complicated, long-winded name. And then as it kind of has developed, it's become more ingrained within the brand. It's like the brand was the umbrella of the Trojan horse, and, you know, it tells stories through Greek narrative, Greek tragedy, but also just like my personal life. And I've kind of focused a lot more on domesticated Greek life and kind of conveying what people consider Australian. And, I do beautiful prints with Brittany Wiper, who, you know, constantly conveys these like objects and paraphernalia in suburban Greek households in my home, and puts it on prints, and people go, oh my gosh, this is so unique. And I'm like, that's actually an Australian object.
Yeah.
You know, this is something that exists within the confines of Australian homes for 50 years. This isn't like brought from Greece and I'm just putting it on a print. It's like something that people live amongst and raise families in Australia. And it's just not really shown in mainstream media, particularly in mainstream fashion. I guess the brand's a vessel for kind of showing these things.
You mentioned the Trojan horse. I understand that it's a powerful symbol in your brand, but also has like deep roots in Greek mythology. What does it represent? What does this symbol represent for you and your brand? And has its meaning also evolved since you first adopted it?
Yeah, I mean, I made the Trojan horse the logo before I even really recognized its true meaning. And I think I kind of addressed this recently, but I feel like things that are kind of in front of you sometimes have the most meaning to you. It's like, you know, it developed so much. Like, I was on eBay, and this is how I actually made the logo. And I typed in Greek folk art, and this little cute Trojan, it's like this wooden thing. I was like, this is so cute. And I printed it off like large scale. I just took a screenshot of this object and I never bought it. And I just like got all these fabrics around my house and started sticking it to this object and kind of collaging it. And then I photographed that, put it on Photoshop, and then made it my logo. And then it kind of took meaning because I made the logo before I even started doing these mass collabs. And then when Fashion Week turned around and offered me a spot, we had 25 artists. And no one actually was fashion designers. Like, it was like, we're doing Fashion Week. No one, I didn't even know what a seam was or grain line or I didn't even know how to construct when we did that. And it was really about bringing people from outside of the fashion industry into this platform and kind of seeing what the result was.
Incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah.
It's but I think that's the role of the designer and the artist, is to bring people who aren't necessarily aligned with that thinking, to bring them in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when I did that show, I wasn't really thinking of myself as an artist. Obviously, it was like, I didn't think I had the full confidence in addressing. I think the project as a whole and what that first show was became an artwork in itself. It was like I was coordinating the actual sphere of the dynamics within that show was the work. And then I kind of I became recognized as an artist through fashion.
Incredible. And
then,
yeah.
Then outside of fashion was an artist. And then it kind of, there's this,
yeah.
I almost Trojan horse.
It's like Amphidromus, like sort of relationship.
Yeah. I Trojan horsed myself too. Along with others.
No wonder it should be your logo.
100%.
Right? Yeah, yeah. But I think that's how it should be. I think it should, one should feed into the other and inform the other. And there comes a certain bravery in that as well.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't know how to do it any other way.
Well, I see that in your work, though. I see that gusto in your work. And I think that's what drew me to you, is that fact that it's almost like with abandonment, like, well, I'm just doing what I do. And I think there's not enough of that, not only in fashion, but in art as well. There are so many variable parts. And I just think when you have somebody who's got that gusto that just says, this is who I am, this is what I represent.
That's the thing, like, fashion has these very kind of antiquated things of who works within it. It's like, you know, you have someone who's a seamstress and a pattern maker, and someone who's got 5 years experience at an old fashion house, and that's how they get the job and they convey messages on a runway. And like, Australians consume these ideas through these very normative, kind of very palatable structures of how they get there. And you know, for me, because I didn't come through fashion, I came through furniture design. And my family, you know, they were like Westfield shoppers. Like, my mum would go to Susan and, random shops. Like, it was not like, you know, designer clothing over $100 did not exist in my household. So it kind of, there was no in between for me. It was like, I just wanted to go to a complete extreme. I didn't really care about making something that should sit in a price bracket or within this person's home. Or people would ask me, actually, who wears your stuff? And I was like, that's not my job. My job is to put something out there.
100%.
And where it lands is really, like, that's what actually makes it exciting.
Well, I often say, you know, even with paintings, that the paintings choose the person. Right. And it's not the other way around.
Yeah.
I don't paint for people. I paint what comes, you know, from within me. And I have tried to do the other way, but it never works. No. It's contrived. It's, you know, you've got to do what is spiritually nourishing you. And that's what I see with your work. It's about that. It's very much aligned with your values as not only as a person, but as what you're representing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's,
you're welcome. Yeah. Anytime.
It's be beautifully said.
$5,000.
Thank you.
I'm giving him $100.
Yeah.
Keep going.
You mentioned to me, and then I looked it up later as well, about the collection you showcased in Athens, Hot Grecians.
Yeah.
And you mentioned how it was directly inspired by your ancestral home, right? Can you share some specific stories or details about the textiles and objects you encountered there and how they translated into the collection?
Yeah, it was actually really special. I went to my family's house in Gathawassos. So my grandmother is one of 10. So everyone in that family was born in that household.
It's the same for my grandmother, I get the vibe.
Yeah. It's like the beds that they were born in, I was literally rummaging through. So the house is totally abandoned. It's one of the most incredible houses in the whole place. Like, my friends who were with me walked past that house separate to me because we arrived 15 minutes earlier and they took pictures of it.
Wow.
And anyway, so I went to the house and it was abandoned and Motel Picture Company came with me to document it. And I went into the kitchen and the whole house is totally like ruins, but we found a whole bowl of buttons and my nan's brother's war coins and the kitchen, the kitchen had lace that was half disheveled that I ripped off. And the fireplace had these, I'm getting goosebumps. So I had the fireplace had like nails in it with this floral curtain. My great grandmother's apron was in the kitchen still hanging.
Wow.
Two necklaces, little tea mugs. And all of these pieces that Bunny Itza was all stitched into the work. So we went there maybe 3 days before the show and I made garments out of it.
Beautiful.
And then I showcased it in Piraeus for Hortus Grecians Volume 6.
Cool.
It was really special. And then on top of it, probably 3 months later, 4 months later, Logos at Hazelhurst with Dewey in an exhibition and all of the works were on display. My whole family, who had never seen these artifacts, came to see the pieces. And actually, I got a message yesterday from my cousin because someone in the family actually put barricades around the house, like properly concreted and barbed wire in the past few weeks. anyway, she messaged me and she was like, you know, thank you so much for doing this, because it's kind of, you know, it's kept these heirlooms in Australia where we can reference it as a family and discover things. It's like, you know.
So good.
Yeah.
It's so important, yeah. Also bringing the family together from such like a point of historical reference.
It was totally emotional.
So are there a lot of elements from that house included in this collection that you're about to show next week, or not really?
No. So what is included in this collection? So off the back of that, so I had 2 weeks to produce that collection in Greece. And then 2 weeks following that, I spent another 2 weeks sourcing rare Greek folk art, textiles, markets. I've spoken to a few Greek friends recently and they told me, oh, the markets you went to, they're not markets, they're the fake ones. And I was like,
sorry.
I'm the one who spent €8 on dolls.
And like, oh, you totally get ripped off.
I'm a perfect candidate for a good
You should have done Bazania.
Yeah. This is my love sign, I love it. And, you know, I came back with Mary and Britt, and we just were like body slamming our bags with fabric. This show, you know, and actually what I did in Greece, which was really interesting, was, you know, the Greek, not just domesticated Greek folk art and home life, but, you know, Greece had like this really integral part in producing textiles. And I went around to every fabric store. Like when I say every fabric store, at least 50 current stores in Greece. And I said to them, which textiles in here were made in Greece, because a lot of them are family-run businesses and they've been around for like years. So all the Greek textiles that are woven or printed are kind of, you know, they kind of stay in the shelves, but there's like 4 of them. So it was really interesting going in and going, so what textiles here were made in Greece? You know, because they start importing now and the textile industry is dying. And they, you know, they're speaking, you know, the family going to the back. And then, you know, they pull out like 3 or 4 out of the whole store. And that's what I bought, you know. So this show has over 250 Greek textiles that I've sourced that are really rare. And it really shows the history of Greece's manufacturing industry and, industrial fabrics and also domesticated fabrics and contemporary Greek tourism fabrics. So it's really merging all of it into one.
So how do you see the connection between the use of these specific textiles and the broader themes of identity and homeland in this collection?
Well, there's a lot of, there's an outfit my sister's wearing and it's actually got stains and shit all over it. And I love that because Greece is built particularly on like this ancient land. And, you know, the whole city is like rubble. And, you know, realistic, it's ruins. And I think when you start designing from the perspective that everything's going to be ancient one day, and, you know, like not discarding kind of really precious materials because it's got a stain, it's like everything is going to be stained and destroyed and decay one day. Everything, you know, all of our things that we possess. And when I went to my family's house that my grandmother said, you know, this was a gorgeous house and there was 10 people living in it. And I went, it was destroyed. It was like, this understanding that, like, you know, these things were once cared for and they're precious and now they're rubble. Mm. And so, you know, extracting, you know, this kind of these really decayed textiles and not dismissing them, but actually rather preserving them and giving them a new life. And I mean, it's quite crazy that these textiles from, I don't know, 60, 70 years ago that were like literally at a market and then on a major platform like Australian Fashion Week. And then I kind of paired them with, you know, fabrics that I've painted with like Australian paint, which is something I've been exploring, which is like, you know, what is an Australian paint? It's like, you know, you go to the paint store and I was like reading the things and it's like Australian wattle, Australian gum
green.
Gum green.
Yeah. Australian sky blue.
And these like paints that are kind of, it's funny.
It is funny.
And painting.
But that in essence, Jordan, is you though. Like you're referencing these historical Greek almost artifacts and then you're fusing them with who you are, the Australian, and putting them together.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty exciting because that's what I do essentially with my work. I take what's considered as a given metaphorical, mythological Greekness,
yeah.
and I spin it on its head.
Yeah. I mean, it's in Paddington, for God's sake. Like,
that's right.
You know, Paddington is like, so, like to have a mural in Paddington of, you know, Greek figures, figurative painting that's telling a story as you're driving through Oxford Street.
Yeah.
That's, you know, that's...
Paddington has an old Greek history as well. Like
that's
some
right.
of the very,
that's
very
right.
first migrants
Post-Second
actually
World War,
went, yeah.
you know, there's a particular street in Paddington, William Street, where...
Don't tell me that was Greek.
It was all
William
Greek.
Street.
William Street.
Get out of
as
here.
As wide as you could get. It was all terrace houses with 3 to 4 families living in one small terrace house.
Yep.
And that's how they sort of got on. They created these enclaves, these little ghettos.
Yeah.
And that's how they proliferated.
Well, community networks, in other words.
Yeah.
You know, solidarity.
That's right.
I had no idea about that. That's
yeah.
So you didn't know that?
No.
Oh,
William
God.
Street, it feels so white to me.
Well, it is. I mean, you know... I'm talking
but
like...
I mean, there is like the element of like, you know, Greeks assimilating as well after
course,
the third generation.
Yeah,
there
course.
Is a big conversation
100%.
Around that. But
yeah.
at the same time, like, they're not... we're not quite white at the same time as well. So
no,
it's like
it's
a whole other
like
conversation,
kind of
obviously. But yeah.
of like that stride.
But see, what I battled with my work when I first started 30 years ago, and I applaud Jordan for doing this because I did the same thing without even realising I was doing it, was I had one art dealer and he was Scottish and he said to me, don't you think you should shorten your surname? And
no,
I said
it's
to
funny
him,
you say that because recently we had Helen Kapalos in our
oh,
studios
yes,
in
Helen
Melbourne.
Kapalos, yeah.
And she was saying how she was at the news organization and she was trying to get a job there and the editor was like, you should change your name. And she's like, what should I change my name to? And the editor was like, you should change it to Smith.
Yes.
Helen Smith. And it's gone a bit crazy on our social media platforms, both on Instagram and Facebook, because there's so many stories that people like comment underneath, telling their story in the 70s, 80s, 90s of how their surnames were forced to be changed.
I've got like, the shortest Greek name in history.
Yeah, you
absolutely.
Do, actually.
Yeah.
I often wondered, did you abbreviate it? Was
no,
it Jordan? That's how it is.
No, it's totally not abbreviated. Mm.
Because I come from a line of creatives like Tony Rafty,
yeah.
the cartoonist. He's a Raftopoulos. Emmanuel Raft, Raftopoulos. But in that era, post-Second World War, when you came out here as a European, you were considered as the other. You were considered as a bit of a freak, as an alien. So there was all that nuance going on. And then I suppose, you know, being born in the 70s, I was just coming out of that whole period where it wasn't cool to be Greek yet.
No,
you know,
but this is the thing as well with especially, so, you know, Greek painting, but aside, like Greek textile, particularly like my grandparents have been making, you know, I didn't grow up around painting in my house. It was Greek textile embroidery.
Mm.
And it was only until I became a textile. Yeah. And it was only until I became a textile artist that I started really thinking about, you know, my, like not even influence, but I got to my yard house and I was like, every single thing in this place is freaking textile on the wall. You know, it's like a shrine. And the art that I produce was produced by them, but this is the first generation in my family that it would be acknowledged as serious art. It was actually almost seen as like, this is what women do in the corner of the house and they make it for the family. It was never like something that was on display or spoken about or, you know, it was a very intimate exchange between families and gifting. But as an artist, if I produced an embroidery at the scale that they produced embroideries, which was this big, I mean, it would be worth a lot more. It would be talked a lot more. It'd be contextualized a lot more. Like, they never had that opportunity. So when I show, you know, these pieces on the runway and, you know, my yaya's there and the audience, you know, it's like, I feel like, you know, she's a part of it. I'm like, we're doing this
celebrating
together. Yeah,
it's a celebration yeah
yeah
get that.
For sure
yeah
so yeah he's going to be at the runway
yeah
perfect
oh yeah it? I showed her the videos and everything. She's like, Jordan, are you sure that people want to watch you dancing for 20 minutes in the screen? I was like yes
yes yeah yeah
yes,
now on your collaboration specifically,
yes,
both of you explore, I guess, you know, your Greek Australian heritage through your work, but through different mediums, of course. How did your individual perspectives on this shared identity influence the collaboration?
For me, really, it's just about bringing a fresh take. Like, you know, a Fashion Week schedule has, I don't know how many people, maybe 25 different brands, and each one has a unique voice. And, you know, for me, obviously, you know, the capstone of it being a Greek brand is really important, but it's also about how it juxtaposes other ideas. Like, George's experience as a Greek Australian is very different to mine. You know, as you said, it's like, it wasn't cool to be Greek when you started. For me, I think it was. You know, it was a new take on it, whereas, you know, my mom and my dad were telling me stories about being Greek in the 80s and 90s, and, you know, it's like being called, you know, a world kind
of thing.
Like, you know, it's, I wasn't really ever called that. So there's things that merging my experience, and, you know, you're talking about me going, oh, that's fresh about you, that's, you know, and I'm saying, well, that's fresh about you. It's like, there's a common understanding, but there's a totally different experience, and parlaying into each other as a collaboration is important. It's whether or not it's deep or surface, the context of it kind of coming together, especially in this work, makes me excited. Because when we did it, it was like, you know, I've got heaps of looks going on right now. Shit's flying in every corner. A toga is actually such a simple design, but it's actually so important to Greek design. And guess what? I can get away with it. The other designs can't. I can wrap it around them. It's like, you know, I better use a toga in the collection because it's easy and it's sexy and it's relevant to the brand. So, you know, I sourced the material. George, you know, kind of went for it and did the storytelling. And then the platform in which the show is what contextualizes it and brings it together. You know, you did a collab, Alex Perry 2007, which I saw in your stories. And yeah, I love Alex Perry. And I was like, that's so fresh. And we were already speaking about doing a collab.
Yeah, we were, yeah.
Before it. But, you know, we're just so freaking busy. And then I was like, wait, you did a collab with Alex Perry for Fashion Week. And then we're like, okay, we'll meet tomorrow. We'll just, like, do this. And do it, you know. So it wasn't, it's just, what do you reckon?
I just think that things happen organically. And when it's time for them to happen, they really do. I've seen it throughout my career. Even, for example, doing the collaboration with Alex, you know, all those years ago, it was the same thing. And I think for me personally, when I do a collaboration, I have to feel that resonance with the other person. That's what a collaboration is. And I've said to Jordan, you know, that I see what he strives for in his work and I recognise it and I understand it because that's what I embattle in my work a lot. And to take the sort of those Greek tropes and to sort of upend them on their head and then reinterpret them, you know, I think it's quite a fresh approach to things, and I think we need more of it because there are a lot of great Greek Australian artists that don't necessarily have this platform or this platform, you know, and I just encourage more and more to come to the fore and like push forward because we need it. For me to get a piece of fabric from Jordan and to really let my arm go and just, you know, be free with it. It was just, it was refreshing. More than anything.
Sometimes it's just powerful to come together. Like, even if the piece was not an outcome that was anticipated, the idea of a collaboration is sometimes is more exciting than the actual work.
So it's like a process-driven sort of approach.
Yeah, you put two people together, and this is what happens, you know. Like, you know, when big brands even announce it, it's like, oh, Versace times Fendi. It's like no one's even seen the work yet, but they're like, what the hell? They're collaborating.
Yeah.
People's idea of what something will be, you know, is exciting in the first place. And that is a result first and foremost.
To start with, yeah.
Yeah. The result of that is still a response that people engage with. It's like, what, you know, when they're looking at it, they're curious about how, who did what, you know, why did it come about? Like there's questions that come that are asked at the work, you know, organically, you know, separate to just someone going, I did this in isolation. That's what's cool about a collab. It doesn't actually need to be anything more than that sometimes. And that's why toga for this was, it's like, this is powerful that, you know, two different artists at two different stages of their career, you know, are coming together for a platform. That in itself was enough for me. And that's why I just trusted the process.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's other times though, I want to do stuff where it's way more involved and, you know, there is this, you know, build out that kind of emerges from it. But this, a starting point is powerful, you know, and I think sometimes people want to build something up to be this biggest and best thing and it stops them from actually doing it. You know?
And I'm never a person that sort of shies away from being open or opening the door for somebody to walk through. I truly believe in that. And I don't think there's enough of that that goes on. And, you know, for me, the act of doing something in itself speaks volumes, and allowing for things to just happen. And like you said, if it came off, which it has, it's fantastic. And if it wasn't this one, it'll be the next one.
Exactly. But
it's just a broader sort of scope of thinking and intent of working as well, you know. And I just think that there's so many pathways and so many different avenues that a collaboration can take as well. Like, this thing could be a huge beast where, God knows what, a Greek tragedy.
Got one last question for both of you. As we talked about, Jordan, the Trojan horse is a central motif for you. And for you, George, from what I understand, the horse of St. George is a very central motif to your work as well, a recurring theme. How do these symbols interact in your work? What should we expect to see?
Well, I know for me that the motif of St. George is more of a personal sort of driver, in that it's a reminder, not just to myself, but to the viewer, whoever looks at my work, to put themselves as St. George and to be brave and to be courageous and to go forward with gusto and abandon. Because I think these days there's a lot of fear that circumvents people. And I think with what I do, I take things to a certain point and then I almost destroy them to build them up again. And that's where the work gets its resonance. And I think what I wanted to achieve, or what I always strive to achieve, if something is contrived, I destroy it, because it doesn't have that real sort of realism to it, that pathos to it. And for me, the whole symbolism of the horse, where it's the beast, and it's almost as though the taming of the beast, the horse and the rider, like Marino Marini, the great artist, mm-hmm. where they become one.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
I feel like everyone on the runways becomes their own beast. Yeah. You know, it's like they become activated, and the work, you know, it's like it becomes a moving image. It's like, and that's what I was trying to say, like, that's what I love about Fashion Week. Especially because, you know, 6 months of the first year is fashion for me, and then the second is art and my visual art practice. And, you know, getting to see these pieces that sit on a rack and, you know, mannequins for months as they're being developed, even, you know, the piece with George, and it's like, this work is not on a wall. It is going to be flying down the runway, being interactive. Yep. And the picture, you know, becomes apparent to people at different times and moments. And, you know, the sound... You know, I haven't timed, you know, which song comes on at when. Like, that horse could be doing a disco down the runway, or could be going down to, you know, like,
cantering down the runway.
Or go, like, you know, this slow thing.
Just and galloping.
There's a spontaneity that keeps me on my toes and everyone on their toes, the model on their toes. It's just, you know.
But see, that's why I also do things like the billboard on Oxford Street, is because it's a flash. Yeah. You're in a car, you turn your head, and you see these big Grecian heads just staring at you or looking into the distance. And
it wasn't a flash for me. I was stuck at a red light.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
But for some people, it's like an animation. And when you can take these tropes, these messages that are loaded, and put them into a 3D form, and they're just bounding down the runway.
Yeah.
I think it's incredible. It's just taking your practice into a whole nother sphere, which is exciting.